Ficta Inferno is explicit in every way. Hello, lovely listeners. It's Maya. It's a solo Maya episode this time around. Sorry again in advance for how weird the schedule has been. It's been a hectic time, especially going into holiday season, especially with two people who work in retail. And, well, we're going to try and fix up a few things with the podcast. Definitely going to go in for some changes and definitely trying to work out a schedule again that works for the both of us. So in the meantime, you're stuck with me and we're going to have a little bit of fun. Do I know what I'm doing? Absolutely not. But what am I going to tell you right now? I have a book addiction, guys. I mean it. I can't explain enough of a book addiction, specifically horror. Just in my hand right now, these are like the next four books that I really hope to read. The King in Yellow by Robert W. Chambers. Man, Fuck This House by Brian Asman. Hex by Thomas Old Helvolt. And then Horror Store by... what's his name? He has like Grady Hendrix. His last name is Hendrix, Grady Hendrix. He's actually written a lot of interesting things like My Best Friend's Exorcism, Final Girls Support Group, and the other one's escaping me. But with Horror Store, it's basically a horror story based off of like insert horror in IKEA. That's freaking genius to me. And I don't know, the book itself is pretty cool looking, honestly. It looks like a catalog. It's got horror elements. I'm pretty excited for this one. Also excited for the others just because King in Yellow is supposed to be, I don't know, like, it's one of the greatest weird tales ever written, and that was said by H.P. Lovecraft. It's literally written on the front. I have it in hardcover. I couldn't get it in softcover. It's cheaper, but it's like, it's a pretty cool looking book, and it should be an interesting read. And then Man, Fuck This House just sounds kind of interesting, because who doesn't like a title called Man, Fuck This House? Same night I got that, I also got The Terror, which is based off of the lost expedition of the HMS Terror in Erebus, which they actually did make into an AMC miniseries. I only watched the first two episodes, but it was already making my heart palpitate a lot, because literally there are scenes where, obviously it's CGI, but it's like they have the characters underwater and it is just terrifying. Because you get that whole isolation and I just expect some sort of Lovecraftian beast to come out, but that's not what happens. Spoilers. But anyhow, let's get on with the main juice. Just what am I doing? Well, I went back to Wattpad because why not for a solo Maya episode? And as I've mentioned, I have a horror addiction. And there's a horror section on Wattpad. The second story is a Michael Myers ex-reader called Mine. To all of my lovely, lovely horror fans out there, if you know, you know, Michael Myers does not, no, he does not fuck. No. He doesn't. I'm just a little bit, it's probably because of Dead by Daylight. It's totally because of Dead by Daylight, but that makes it even more annoying because he's the worst to go up against. Anyway, chapter one, Hello. June 11th, 1967. The little girl looked around. The only thing she could see was trees. Where was her mother taking her? She had said she had to accompany her to work because nobody could babysit her, and she didn't want to leave her alone at home. It was annoying. She was 9 years old now. She could take care of herself. I mean, in 1967, yeah, that's how it be, but I'll get to it. A gray structure appeared in front of the car. Like, literally, it just bolted right out of the ground. Like,
I don't know. Just vines shooting up from the ground and spiking everywhere. It literally came out of nowhere. It looked old and neglected. She could already feel the sad aura of the building. I mean, yeah. They passed a sign. Smith's Grove Sanitarium. You see, this is where I'm like, I feel like in 1967, I don't know, don't quote me on this, I don't know much. Yeah, rules were lax on where you could and couldn't bring your children, but I feel like bringing your small child, like your 9-year-old child, to a sanitarium, especially if it's like a high security place, especially if this is where they had Michael Myers after he killed his whole family except for his little baby sister. Yeah, this is where I want to bring my kid. Couldn't just park her in front of the TV, Mom? The car stopped. The two got out of it and walked towards the big doors. Her mother repeated the rules she had given her the night before. Be quiet. Always stay with her or another nurse and don't approach the patients. It was a simple task. Then don't stay with the nurses, because they will have to approach patients. It's 1967. She can be by herself at home. Let the kids play on the bikes. The interior was a little better than the outside. Everything was painted in white and gray. They walked to a restroom. In it were two women, one filing her nails and the other making... Oh, it's restroom, two separate rooms, not restroom, one word, bathroom. So they're not making coffee in the bathroom like I thought they were, because that makes sense. Toilet coffee, anyone? Oh, man, no, they... Oh, no! Oh, yeah, it's an ex-reader. What do I name her? Betty. Her name is Betty. Betty hid behind her mother. Her social skills weren't the best, and her shyness didn't help either. Well, yeah. Oh, no, she doesn't use quotations. Oh, no, she doesn't use quotations. It's just like the dashes. No, this is the worst. More malice, Tina said, taking a sip of her freshly brewed toilet coffee. Her eyes widened when she saw the small figure behind her friend. 9-year-olds aren't that small, but they're also not that large, so I don't know where I'm getting at. She approached them and bent down. Hey there, little one. She waved her left hand. You must be Betty. I'm Tina, she smiled. Okay, she knew that she... I don't want to think about it. Hi, Betty muttered her... it's orbs. What periwinkle orbs meeting the ground after she spoke. Tina laughed and got up. She went to the shelf to grab a mug and pour some toilet coffee in it. She gave it to Alice and asked the child if she wanted anything. She shook her head. She didn't want to bother. God, it must be a great home life. She sat at the table. She had a little backpack with her. It was a good idea to bring a notebook and some pencils. She began to draw, getting into her own world of fantasies. The hours passed, but not in her innocent mind. She snapped out of it when she heard her stomach roar, like literally roar like a tiger. She realized she was alone in the room. The woman, Tina, and her mother were nowhere to be seen. So much for rule number one. She waited patiently, but no one came. She decided to go find someone, because that's not breaking the rules. Anyone who could help her. She exited the room and began to walk. The place looked like a labyrinth. She lost count of how many rooms she had accidentally gotten into. This is a very shit high security... Well, again, it's 1967, so... Oh, no, it's 1967 in a sanitarium. No! 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 It's not good. It's not good, guys. It's really not. This is when it started to get really shitty. What scared her most was that she hadn't been able to find a single person. She entered a... Bullshit. 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 You and I both... Well, the author doesn't know. I knows that they had these places slammed butt to gut with patience. some that shouldn't be there and some that needed help, but they weren't getting the proper help that they needed because everything was being extremely underfunded. And again, everyone was being shoved butt to gut, and there was like one nurse per like, what, 20 patients or some statistic like that. She entered a hall. It seemed like the others she had already saw, except for a detail. That is a weird sentence. The last door was opened. We should investigate. Totally. Golly gee, a noise north of here. Let's go investigate. No, don't do it. Also, a familiar voice could be heard from that room. Her mother was there. She slowly walked towards the room. When she reached it, she poked her head out a bit to see what was going on inside. Her mother was crouching in front of a blonde boy sitting on a bed. Don't do that. Beside him was a tray with food and water. Don't do that. He was looking at his hands, which rested in his lap. Betty tried to get a better look of his face, but she noticed he was wearing a mask, a black mask. He had some more hanging on the walls. Is she basing this off the original or the remake? I'm pretty sure it's the remake. Please, Michael, you have to take off the mask to eat. Or you have to take the mask off to eat. The boy didn't respond. In fact, he didn't even look at the nurse. He didn't even move. If it wasn't because she could hear his breathing, she would have thought he was dead or something. The woman let out a sigh. Please, Dr. Loomis reproached me because I let you eat alone and I don't want more problems. The boy didn't like that, or that's what it seemed so. His breathing became slightly heavier and his hand twitched a little. It was clear that he wasn't comfortable without his mask. Maybe he doesn't like his face, Betty thought. Suddenly, she started to feel uncomfortable. It was an strange feeling, nothing like she had felt before. She felt watched, but it wasn't normal. It felt like she was under a giant magnifying glass. It was so strong it burned. However, she was being burned like an ant with a magnifying glass. However, it didn't take her long to find out where that feeling came from. The boy was staring at her. She could see the eyes behind the mask. They were opaque, dark, almost black. She had to hide behind the wall to stop staring at his eyes. She could feel the boy's look on her, burning her like she was nothing more than paper. He was literally looking right through her soul, trying to steal it, or plotting a way to kill her, because literally, Michael is a child that kills. Alice noticed this. Michael was staring at the door. At first, she didn't worry. He had been doing that since he entered Smith's Grove for 4 years. Wait, 4 years ago. But something felt wrong. Usually, his stare was distant, like he just wanted to go away. But this time, he was concentrated. It was like he wanted to destroy the wall to look behind it, which he probably could. Michael, is everything all right? It wasn't like she was expecting an answer. She just wanted to let the kid know she had noticed his actions. Alice got up and walked towards the door. She found Betty. So that was what he was observing. She started to feel worried, but at the same time, she was curious. Why was this kid staring at her daughter with such intensity? Probably thinking about killing her, because that's what he did. Anyway, she wasn't... You know, this is a bad idea, and I think if you don't want Dr. Loomis to, like, you know, reprimand you more... This is gonna get you fired. Anyway, she wasn't the only one who was curious. Michael was actually surprised to see another human being that wasn't a nurse or Dr. Loomis. She was even a child, like him. But why was she in his door? And most important, why was she staring at him? It's because of the mask, Michael. You're wearing a mask. He had only been able to appreciate her eyes for a few seconds. He was planning on totally ripping them out, wasn't he? But that was enough for him to be able to record them in his memory. Big periwinkle eyes. He liked them. They were pretty. Unfortunately, she hid behind the wall. He kept staring in case she would come back out again. In the end, curiosity killed the cat. Two cats. Okay, curiosity killed the cat, but satisfaction is what brought him back. Hey, Betty, why don't you come all in and introduce yourself? The girl looked at her mother. She wasn't completely sure about meeting this boy. I mean, why was he in there?
look, I know he's a child and you might feel like you have some sort of, I don't know, like something towards a child, like sympathy, but he legitimately killed his family. He killed his family, guys. I don't think this is a good idea.
The girl looked at her mother. She wasn't completely sure, blah, blah, blah. She sighed and entered the room. The boy hadn't looked away for a single second. She came near him.
Hello, my name is Betty. Betty Danger. Oh my God.
The girl looked at him, waiting for an answer. The boy just tilted his head to the side. Alice bent down and put her hands in her daughter. Right through her daughter's shoulders. She was amazed. For once, Michael reacted to someone. She decided to try something more.
Betty, he is Michael Myers, she said sweetly. Come on, honey, where are your manners? Give him a handshake.
No! No! No, 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 no.
Shyly, the girl extended her hand. Michael looked at it for a moment and then returned to her eyes. He can tell she was nervous and slightly uncomfortable. Yeah, I'm surprised.
Oh my God.
He took a good look at her, always taking his time. Long black locks, fair skin, and of course her beautiful periwinkle orbs that just floated around her. After finishing this, he accepted her hand. He didn't shake it. He just grabbed it. Her skin was soft, really soft. He was gonna carve it up late and wear it like a suit. Oh God. Betty let out a sigh after that. She didn't notice she was holding her breath. She started to calm down, the burning feeling slowly going away. Now it was a comfortable warmth. Yes, this kid Michael Myers never left her eyes, but he seemed more tranquil now. They heard footsteps approaching them.
Oh my fucking God! Alice, I lost Betty! I'm sorry!
Tina entered the room. The scene stunned her. The boy was touching Betty and Alice was allowing it. She was even smiling like an idiot. Alice? Can we talk for a moment? She grabbed her arm and...
You're gonna leave them alone in the room?
Bad idea. Bad idea. Both moved a little away from the place. Alice, what the fuck is happening? She whispered.
Didn't you see it? Michael took her hand.
Yes, I know. I have eyes. She sighed.
What I'm trying to say is, why do you let him do that to Betty?
Let him do what? He's just holding her hand.
Yes, but he's dangerous. What if he does something to her? Are you not worried about this?
Alice looked down. Of course I am, but I want to help this boy, okay? He's always just staring out a window or making masks. I think we can at least try something for him.
Tina thinked about it. This was crazy.
Are you going to tell Loomis about this?
No, you know he has a weird obsession with Michael. What if he tries to take Betty away?
I'm going to do this without him. If we see that this becomes dangerous for anyone, we stop, okay?
That usually happens after the nurse's face gets bitten off.
She sighed, defeated. Fine, I'm in.
You guys are going to lose your jobs.
Okay, there's a point of... No, you're going to lose your jobs. Alice hugged her. They returned to Michael's room. The two kids were in the desk, literally in the desk, phased through. The tray was now empty. Alice picked it up and approached them.
Betty was drawing in her notebook and Michael was making a mask. She laughed a little and left the room, leaving Tina watching over the kids.
Betty was in the car again. The whole trip back home, she was thinking about the child she met. He seemed normal, except for one thing, his eyes. They were the most captivating thing about him. She couldn't get the image out of her head. She couldn't forget how those eyes seemed so off, as if a veil of darkness covered them. But that only made her interest in him increase.
9-year-olds aren't that deep. I need to get that out there.
Oh boy. Oh boy. It's... Oh boy. Oh boy.
Chapter 2. Danger, July 28th, 1967.
Mom, when can I see Michael?
Be patient. You know, he's with Dr. Loomis now.
Betty sighed. He always seemed off after his sessions with his psychiatrist. He just sat and stared at the wall. She wanted to do something for him, so she started to think, what could cheer Michael up? An idea came to her mind. A drawing. He loved her drawings.
She opened her notebook and took out a pencil. She tried to put all her artistic skills in the little present. It took quite a while to do it. With the last touches, she finished it. She ripped the sheet from it and turned it. Behind the draw, she wrote a little note for him.
Come on, Betty. Michael's session ended a few minutes ago. He must be back in his room by now, Alice said.
She jumped out her seat and followed her mother. She took her to the boy's room and opened the door. He was sitting on his bed, looking to the ground. She hid the paper behind her back.
Hey, Mikey.
She slowly walked towards him. Betty didn't notice that he was looking at her out of the corner of his eyes. She sat by his side.
I made you a present.
The boy moved his head to look at her. This made Betty smile. He seemed interested in it. She gave him the sheet and muttered an, I hope you like it. Michael took it and looked at it. The picture showed a blonde boy with a black mask and... You forgot to put haired... And a black-haired girl holding hands. It was them. He didn't realize he was smiling. The fact that she had took the time to draw something for him made him feel a warm sensation in his chest. But Betty couldn't see that, so she started to worry. Didn't he like it? Was he mad at her for some reason? Suddenly, Michael hugged her. I would be shitting bricks. That took her by surprise, but she quickly returned the hug. Alice watched the scene, feeling happy for both of them. She heard footsteps approaching them. Dr. Loomis was coming to Michael's room. Fuck! She taped the little girl by the arm and broke the hug. Both kids looked at her, one worried and one angry.
Loomis is coming. Hide under the bed, Betty, she whispered.
She quickly obeyed. Alice took the drawing from the boy's hands and put it under the pillow. She started to feel weird, a burning sensation invading her stomach. She started to look around the room, only to finish focusing on the small figure of the blonde boy. They only kept eye contact for a few seconds, but that was more than enough for Alice to notice the child's deadly stare. She could see the rage in his darkened eyes. Child of rage. Dr. Loomis entered the room, immediately feeling like something was wrong. He looked at Alice, then at Michael. The nurse seemed extremely terrified.
Mrs. Danger, is everything all right?
She gulped.
Oh, yes. I was checking if Michael needed something. He had a skeptical look on his face.
Right, he paused. Well, I just came to let Michael know that our sessions are going to be longer from tomorrow. Alice nodded. The man just stared at her and then leaved the room. Left. When she was sure he was far away from there, she had her daughter come out of her hiding. Betty sighed and looked at her friend. Her mother grabbed her, saying they have to go. Now. She tried to stay, but her mother was clear. Michael grabbed her, too. She could feel his iron grip. God, he was strong, despite being just a kid.
Michael, let her go.
He didn't move.
Michael, I said let her go. But she didn't want to go. Betty wanted to stay with him and only him. After all, she was his friend, his best friend. Why couldn't she understand? Mikey, don't worry. I'll come back.
He looked at her, his mortal stare becoming a soft one. She took his hands, interlacing their fingers, a little smile showing on her face.
I promise, okay?
He gave a quick nod. Betty pressed her lips on the cheek of the mask. A little insecure, he let go of her. Alice took her daughter of the room before the kid had the chance to try something. She realized this was a bad idea. Tina was right. Michael was a dangerous kid.
No fucking shit.
But the damage was already done. Betty didn't understand why her mother was acting weird. She was fine that when they got there, but after Loomis came, she was scared. Scared of her friend. She noticed how her voice broke while talking to Michael. The little girl had forgotten the first time they made eye contact. She had forgotten she thought his eyes were black. She only remembered the sweet looks he gave her with those icy blue eyes. Still terrifying. She found herself in the restroom again. Like, two separate words. Restroom, not lounge or employee lounge. It's the toilet. Tina was there too, drinking her toilet coffee, filling some documents and ordering folders because that's all nurses do. When she saw how agitated her partner was, she ran to her, worried. Betty sat while Tina helped her mother to relax. Oh boy. I know what they mean by partner, but still. Alice, what happened? The woman told her everything that happened in great detail. How his mood had changed so fast. How he stared at her. How he grabbed her child. Everything Alice couldn't stop repeating how dangerous that kid was and the big mistake she made by introducing him to Betty. No fucking shit. Betty listened to the whole conversation. It hurt her to hear all of that. They didn't know Michael. He wasn't dangerous. He would never hurt her, would he? I mean, he wouldn't hurt Betty, but I think he'd hurt your mom, Betty. Michael was still standing in the middle of his room, thinking about everything, like literally everything. She will come back for him. Well, she promised it, and he never forgets. Never. He took the drawing from under the pillow and looked at it. It seemed that something was written on the back of the paper. He flipped it. I noticed you always act strange after you sessions with your doctor, so I wanted to do something to make you feel better. Gifts always cheer me up. It's my love language. So I thought a present would make you feel happier. I hope it did. Act strange. Feel better? Happiness? He never thought about it before. He didn't act strange. He just enjoyed to look at her. She was really pretty. That's all. But he didn't want Betty to know in case she would hide again. But he just found a way to do it without her knowing she was being stalked. He didn't need to feel better because he never felt bad in the first place. Honestly, he never really felt bad before they met. He only had experienced rage. But the warm sensation in his chest was new for him. It was weird, but he liked it. Oh god, Yandere Michael at like 9 years old, 10 years old. I don't know how old he is. He's still a kid. Same thing with happiness. He didn't know what it was. Maybe that was what Boo felt when he played with her. What? When that happened, she was always smiling, so it made sense. Who the fuck is Boo? She was always smiling, so it made sense, at least for him. He smiled early when she gave him the drawing. Oh, maybe the warmth in his chest and the thing that made him smile were connected in some type of way. They always appeared when he was with Betty. But when she needed to go, she took those sensations in him with her, and the rage came again. But this last time, rage came with something more. When the warm sensation faded, a burning knot replaced it. When his smile disappeared, that is spelt wrong, an emptiness invaded him. He didn't like those feelings. He didn't wanted them. So he came to a conclusion. Betty was the one responsible for what he was experiencing. She made him feel strange, but in a good way. Nobody had ever made him feel like that. Maybe sometimes his little sister had done it, but they never lasted as long as this one's. Betty made him feel happy, and he loved every second of it. Okay, I kind of like how the Michael Myers perspective is written. I like it. I like kind of how that little bit of it is, I like it. It's not, that wasn't bad. I'm still a little bit, everything else about, look guys, sometimes I can just kind of, I don't know, the word I'm looking for is like, I can forgive the weirdness of the situation that brings everything together. And I know on this, oh, it's supposed to be critical. The one thing that I will be a little bit critical on this is the spelling errors and the errors of like tense, present, and past tense being like misused. As well as, I don't know, it's just, there's some things that are clumsily written. This isn't the worst thing. And I'm far more interested in the parts of, like, if everything was told in the perspective of Michael Myers,
I think that it could be interesting. Because here's a psychopath's concluding of, like, what is what are these feelings? And then just suddenly obsessing over someone. If we had everything else not related to, like, the reader and her life, it could be fine. But if it was all just Michael Myers and we were just getting his opinion about suddenly meeting this girl and everything, like, it's all in his perspective, that would be actually be a really good story. That would be a good fan fiction. Hell, if someone wanted to take it and write an actual story, it could be interesting. Actually, I know, like, people have done it before, but it's like, I don't know. This is just that last tidbit was far more interesting to me than anything else, and it wasn't badly, like, written. Chapter 3. Indelible Mark? August 13th, 1967. 2 weeks. 2 weeks since the last time she saw Michael. After that day, her mother didn't let her see him anymore. She didn't even want to talk about it. She avoided any question that had to do with her friend by changing the subject of the conversation. Yeah, just talking about that toilet coffee. Sighing, she took her pencil case from the backpack. Wait, then where is she? The only reason that she was taking her to the sanitarium was because she couldn't find another babysitter. Could she suddenly find a babysitter for her? Or was there always... I don't know. She grabbed a black pencil and started scribbling. Messy black circles quickly filled the paper. After a few minutes, she decided to put everything back inside the pack. Oh, she's still at the sanitarium. Tina entered the room, tired. Her workday was about to end in an hour, as was Alice's. Luckily, nobody needed her now, so she could rest. She left her set of keys on the table, took off her nurse hat, and threw herself on a chair. She noticed Betty was there. She looked sad. Tina, the little girl looked over at her. Yes, honey. How is Michael? The question made her swallow. He wasn't very good at the moment. Every time Alice entered his room to do something, he gave her a look full of hate. It was so intense that other people could feel it. She even had to take care of some of the tasks Alice used to do at her request. Well, he has been a little angry these days. The girl started thinking. She hadn't kept her promise. Of course he would be angry. Little tears started to fill Betty's eyes. She needed to explain everything to him. But how? Neither Tina or her mother would let her see Michael. A nurse rushed through the door. She looked agitated. Tina quickly approached her, asking what was happening. She said something about a patient and that they needed help. They both ran away, like literally just running full sprint, leaving Betty alone with the keys on the table that Tina forgot. Tina, you should be fired. She looked at the table. Tina had forgotten her keys and hat. Is she gonna wear the hat? An idea came to her mind. She can take the keys and go visit Michael. She's gonna disguise herself with the hat. No, she's not. But please. Her mother was probably occupied too, so nobody should realize that she isn't in there. Besides, it would be a short visit. She'd only tell him the reason why she couldn't go to see him. Oh boy, that's gonna get her mom killed. She took her backpack, grabbed the keys and the hat, and exited the room. She didn't grab the hat, but in my mind, she grabbed the hat. Walking slowly and carefully through the halls. Finally, she found the right one. She came up to the last door. She tried to open it with all the keys until she found the right one. She gently pushed the door open, looking inside. Or you could do gently, she pushed the door open, looking inside. Her eyesight focused on blonde, disheveled hair. Michael was sitting at his desk, focused on something.
Probably making a mask, Betty thought.
Tot. It's T-O-U-G-H-T. She closed the door and came near him, trying to be as quiet as possible. Unfortunately, a little giggle gave her away.
Yeah, exactly like that.
The boy turned around. His eyes widened when he saw the girl in his room. Rapidly, he hugged her, feeling all the contained rage suddenly leaving him and being replaced by those pleasurable feelings. Oh, please don't write that about 9-year-olds. I know it's... Don't think that way, but it's like... you can put happy, you could put anything but that word.
Hey there, Mikey. Did you miss me? She said sweetly.
He nodded. He took her hand and dragged her to the desk, pointing to a newly started mask. They both sat and he started to work on it. She put out her notebook and pencil case. She started thinking about a topic. After all, they always did. Oh, God. She relaxed while Betty talked about something random, Michael listening to each word. Except he actually had, like, elevator music in his head. She decided to explain why she hadn't come before.
Michael?
He looked at her, curious.
Sorry for not coming these weeks. My mom wouldn't let me. I don't know what happened to her.
She paused. She realized maybe this was the last time they would be together for in a long, long time. That made her periwinkle eyes water a little. The boy noticed this. He was about to grab her hand when they heard several knocks on the door, followed by a female voice.
Betty, are you here?
It was Tina. Betty sighed. She grabbed the keys and started to walk to the door. Her wrist was caught in Michael's hand, who slowly shaked his head. She understood he missed her and he wanted to spend more time with her, but she had been trapped. So it only remained to say goodbye and wait until someday they could see each other again.
I'm sorry, Mikey. I really want to be with you, but I can't.
The knocking became louder and louder.
I hope we can see each other in the future, but maybe we can meet when you leave this place.
Once again, she tried to reach the door, but Michael's grip tightened. The girl struggled a little to release her hand, but it didn't work.
I need my hand. Please, let go.
Seeing that there was no response, she started to struggle with all her strength. In a few seconds, the struggle turned into a fight, Michael trying to keep his grip and Betty trying to break free. In the act, she accidentally threw her pencil case to the floor, causing all the objects inside to scatter on the floor. Oh my God, was there a scissors in there? They both fall to the ground, Michael on top of Betty. Tina's desperate shouts and hits were heard in the background. She didn't lock the door behind her, did she? They're going to get her away from him. He should make clear that it would only be for a while and that he would come back for her. Wait. A small brightness caught his attention. A pretty sharp metal object was lying next to the girl's head, scissors. An idea came to his mind. He grabbed it and separated its blades, resting the tip of one of them a little below her left clavicle. Betty began to panic. Was her friend going to kill her? She tried to struggle once more, but she didn't achieve anything. She felt how Michael started to apply pressure and the blade digging into her soft skin, cutting it. Her scream was silenced by the boy's hand. He started to drag it down, cutting a vertical line. Trigger warning! When he finished that, he removed the blade from her skin and placed it near the upper end of the cup and repeated it this 3 more times. Did he brand her? However, he didn't enjoy doing it because he had to see how Betty cried and tried to escape. He wanted to wipe her tears, but the door suddenly opened, revealing Alice and Tina. They rushed to them, grabbing the boy. He swung the scissors, trying to hit one of the nurses, but Alice injected a tranquilizer into his arm. Wow, shit, that was quick. The girl looked at the scene still lying on the floor. Shocked, she could see how Michael's body relaxed. She found his eyesight. It was almost like she could hear him apologizing. His stare was becoming more and more distant with each second, the drug already affecting his system. The woman's put him on his bed and tried to get up, but his body couldn't work properly. He could only twitch his fingers and move his head to the side. He had experienced the tranquilizers before, but he had never hated them as much as that day. Alice picked up Betty, who snuggled into her mother's arm, still didn't take her eyes off the blonde boy. "Goodbye, Michael," she whispered. Tina entered the room. She already had everything they needed to disinfect the wound. Alice grabbed the cotton and damped it with alcohol. Betty hissed in pain when she felt the soft surface touch her fresh cut. They slowly cleaned the injury and the blood. The cuts weren't deep enough to be soon. They would definitely leave a visible scar. Usually, if it's a visible scar, it's going to be one because of, like, needing stitches. But okay. But they would definitely leave a visible scar. When they finished, Alice began to sort everything until Tina spoke to her. "Alice? Yes? I think you should see this." She faced Tina, who pointed a trembling finger at her daughter's bruise. She looked at it and noticed something that, while cleaning it, she hadn't seen. They weren't random cuts. They were all connected. Alice's face twisted into a grimace of horror, looking at the grotesque wound. The cuts that Betty had formed an M. No shit. Oh wait, we just get a POV? Chapter 4, Curiosity, Betty POV. I woke up. Oh, it's a perspective shift. Ooh. I woke up, agitated, realizing that I was in my room in my house. I looked at the watch that was on my bedside table. 8:30 a.m. Growling, I got up from the bed and headed to the bathroom. I washed my face with cold water, thinking about the blonde boy. This time he spelt it with an E. Who frequented my dreams. I was always in the same white place, which I assumed was some kind of hospital. Always at the end of a corridor. I could see the figure of that child. Well, at first he just appeared like a black shadow, only after many more encounters, I could see that it was a person. However, I could never see his face, no matter how close we were. His face was always blurry. The only feature I could appreciate perfectly were his eyes. Despite their beautiful blue color, they were so dark. For some type of reason, they were familiar to me. Whenever I saw him, I felt something very strange. I felt like I knew him, but I couldn't remember him. No matter how much I tried, whenever I was about to remember, I woke up and forgot everything that I could recall in dreams. I brushed my teeth and fixed my long black hair, still thinking about the recent dream. This time he had something in his hand. I didn't know what it was, but I knew it was sharp. For some reason, the scar on my chest burned a lot, and it didn't stop bleeding. Then his figure was replaced by one of a man, a very tall and sturdy man. We were in a house. He started to chase me. When he finally caught me, I could see the object in his hand, a butcher's knife. He raised it and tried to stab me, but when the knife was about to pierce me, I opened my eyes and everything was gone. Back in my room, I changed my comfy pajamas for my work uniform, a beige shirt and dark brown pants. Seriously, how old are you? I put on some black boots and I was ready. I took my purse and left my house. The cafe where I worked wasn't far from here, so I always walked to it. Hey, Betty! I looked at the house next door. The blonde girl was waving her hand. I returned the gesture, smiling. Laurie Strode, my neighbor and childhood friend. We always walk together to my work, as it is on her way to school. Wait. How old was Michael? Hold on. Just taking a brief moment. Okay, she was Cynthia Myers. She was born in 1961. She was the youngest of the three children. So if she... When Lori was only two, her... Okay, Michael was six. Lori was two. If this is taking place in 67... No, if the dreams were taking place in 67. Wait.
So 62, 63, so it would have been 63, 64, 65, 66, 67, 68, 69. So he would have been 10. Lori would have been 6. So basically she has the same age difference of, like, if Betty is the same age as Michael, then she and Lori would have the same age difference. Okay, it says, like, on our way to school. We started talking about irrelevant things like movies, our hobbies, a boy she likes, and a boy that she likes. So, what are you doing tomorrow? She asked. I looked at her, confused. She rolled her eyes playfully and giggled. You're so involved in that job, you don't even remember that tomorrow is Halloween. Oh, I forgot it. I sighed, feeling a bit sad. How could I forget? Forget it. Surely I'll visit Mom's grave after work and stay home. Her smile faded from her face. She muttered an apology for the commentary. All I could answer was a, don't worry, it's okay. Last year, my mother died in a car accident. It was on Halloween night. She was returning from her job in Smith's Grove when a drunk guy crashed his car with hers. Her car was destroyed and she couldn't get to the hospital alive. Neither of them survived. Since she's gone, everything seems so difficult. I had to leave university because I couldn't afford it and start working to pay the bills. Those things weren't a problem anyway. The worst thing is that I'm alone now. We were always she and I against everything. Or another way to phrase it was always us against the world. We had each other, and it was perfect like that. I miss her a lot. Hey, if you like, we can spend Halloween together. I'll be babysitting Tommy. You can come with me and help me. Well, at least I can distract myself a bit and have some fun. I know my mom would like it. I smiled at her, thanking her. Sure, I'd love to. We arrived at the cafe. I said goodbye to her and entered. The bitter smell of coffee invaded my nostrils. Hey, coffee smells fucking great. Elizabeth greeted me. She was the daughter of the owner of the place. She had beautiful long red hair full of little curls, white skin like porcelain, and green eyes. Where's Dylan? I asked. He is Liz's boyfriend. They met at this cafe 3 years ago. He came to work here to talk to her, and now they have been together for a year. Isn't that super adorable? I would like someone to love me like that, but I guess I can't ask too much since I don't know anyone I could be a couple with, and it's not like someone would appear out of nowhere. Did someone call me? Cue the laugh track. Dylan entered the shop. Liz went to greet him with a kiss while I opened the doors of the store. When I returned, they were still with their making out session. I cleared my throat. They stopped and quickly apologized. They were in the middle of almost fucking on the tables. Man, being the third wheel is a shit. Or is shit. The people started to come, and so we got to work. Between work and fun, time went quickly. After a few hours, the place began to empty. They were approaching 6 p.m., the time we have to close the place. We started to clean the tables and accommodate everything, chatting about tomorrow. We're going to a party at Sally's house. Want to come with us? Liz spoke. No, thanks. I already have plans. What are you going to do? I don't know. I'm going to be with Lori at Tommy Doyle's house. Are you going to be babysitting a kid on Halloween? Really? Dylan said, rolling his chocolate eyes. Come on. Come with us. It'll be much more fun than being with two kids. No, I'd rather be with them before going to that party. You know I don't like them. He was about to protest when Liz punched his arm and looked at him with disapproving eyes. He just sighed and kept sweeping the floor with the opposite end of the broom. I mouthed a thank you to her, and she knows I can't stand when Dylan gets that way. He can be really annoying sometimes. When we finished, Liz closed the shop. I started walking towards my house. Several families were already putting out the decorations for tomorrow, even though that's something that people do all month long in October. Jack-o'-lanterns decorated the porches of the house, giving them a mysterious atmosphere. Even the ones that had the really fucked up looking pumpkin teeth ones.
you know the ones. In a few minutes, I arrived home. It looked a little dull. Maybe it was because it was the only one without decoration. I could put some things, cobwebs and skeletons would look good. They were in the attic. I could put them now since I had nothing to do. But first I was going to take a shower. No, do the labor before you take a shower. I went to the bathroom and took off my shirt. For a moment I stared at my scar. I would like to remember how I got it. I only remember that I was sitting in a chair when Tina and Mom were disinfecting it. She never wanted to talk about it. She just told me that someone else did it to me, but that I shouldn't worry about it because I was safe now. Safe from who? Also, why an M? I always wanted to know who had done this to me and why. I should ask Tina. She has to know what happened. I guess I could see her tomorrow. She always goes to visit Mom when she can. I have the right to know what happened after all. It's a part of me. Alice and Tina. In history, we'll call them roommates, best friends, anything but lovers, because history hates lovers. I realized that I was standing in front of the mirror looking at the scar for quite some time, so I finished undressing and turned it on the water. I still had to hang the decorations. So it's not awful. There are some parts where I'm like, eh. Also, quotations aren't properly used in terms of, like, spoken dialogue, which is something I would change. There's also a lot of, like, spelling errors and just tension errors. There's just errors. The story, so far, not awful. But definitely could use, like, work in terms of just polishing it. Making it look nice and shiny. And proofreading. Proofreading is always a good thing.
Well, that was maybe a one-off. We'll have to see about that. Maybe. Well, hopefully next time it'll be Twilight that Saya and I are reading again. Or maybe if we need to take a break from Twilight, like we needed to take a break from Empress Teresa. Like, we need to take a break from a lot of things, because damn, some of these stories can just get a little bit grating on the nerves. But I hope you enjoyed it, even though this was just a solo Maya episode. With that, I hope you all have a great day, and hopefully we have more to change when it comes to the format.